When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We all have something in common. We all have Caucasian brides. Getting that out there. So we had a conversation about this at the Pastor's Roundtable, interracial marriage. And you had a passion for this topic because, you know, obviously you and Hannah represent a fabric of our society that's very, very common these days in marriage. And, you know, you go back 50 years, that was illegal. Interracial marriage was illegal at one point in America, and now, and it was wrong. It was absolutely wrong. It was a byproduct of the racist mindset of, you know, a lot of the South and the origins of our country. And, you know, you can get on the race topic and just get really, really, really dangerous with your talk because everyone represents a certain mindset towards racism. I don't feel like racism will ever go away because sin will never go away. That's my whole personal belief system.
You're right on that.
However, in the kingdom, you know, one of the most beautiful things I ever witnessed in terms of a Christian worship experience was one of the churches I was at brought worship leaders from around the country, and they sang a song in different languages.
Yeah.
And you just get a representation of the kingdom of God when that happens. So the church should be a representation of love, agape love, you know, having no really representation of a visual look that represents like what you think is right. That's why I believe, at least. But our culture is different, right? So you kind of have to go at it from an angle of what is it that people still put a stigma on for interracial marriage? Why is that even in the context? And then as XO believers, you know, us having, you know, relationships as friends, how do we encourage people to, you know, push past some of those things? Because I have a friend who's a pastor in Atlanta, Georgia. He's a black pastor, married a white girl. Her family pulled a gun on him because they were not happy that she was marrying him. And they tell the story openly. It was he's so lighthearted and fun that he makes it a fun story. But it wasn't a fun story.
No. It wasn't fun then.
And this was not...
That does not sound
fun. Is that
fun.
Loaded?
Is it a prop?
No. He's my age, so it's not like this happened. It's like he's, you know, in his 70s or 80s, and this happened a long time ago. There are still certain cultures and groups and parts of the country where... And I've been surprised to hear this from even them. They said that when they walk into a restaurant, people can sometimes look at them differently.
Totally. Yeah.
And they feel weird. And I would like... Not this conversation. It's not going to solve all that. But I would like for you to kind of download what it was that you were so passionate about in that meeting, and also just talk about the representation of all the young people getting married right now that, you know, as they're moving forward in their marriage, like the pros and cons, the environment that they're creating, the joy of raising kids in that environment.
Yeah.
Take it over.
Yeah, so what's interesting is...
And did I say anything out, like, did you...
No, that's it. That was good.
Okay.
That was really good. So... I started to notice of all these weddings I'm doing, I do about 12 weddings a year. I just can't do any more. It's just too many weekends. My wife will kill me. I tell people, if I do any more weddings, I'll end up doing my own divorce. I can't be gone that many weekends.
Go back to law school and get a divorce.
But I noticed, so this year I'll do 12 weddings. And of the 12, only two of them, of the couples, only two of them are the same ethnic race.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The remaining 10 are all in some way, shape, or form interracial. And so I started doing more studying on this and researching on this, and all the data shows, because of the way that people are moving to the States and coming to America, this isn't necessarily global, but in the American West, that by 2050, the vast majority, over 50% of marriages will be interracial, mm-hmm. which means mm-hmm. over 50% of the kids will be interracial. And this is a real interesting dynamic, because on the one hand, every marriage, no matter who you're married to, has its issues. It's two people coming together. It doesn't matter. There's gonna be tensions, there's expectations, there's issues, there's family, all kinds of stuff. But then you throw in two vastly different cultures who have different approaches to everything. Yeah. So my wife and I'm Asian, Indian, she's white. Our approach to money, different. Our approach to family, different. Our approach to roles in the home, different.
Yeah.
Our approach to parenting styles, different. Our approach to, we love the same Jesus, we worship God together, but we have two very different backgrounds of the kind of church that we would go to. Our jokes are different, where I'm laughing at a certain stand-up comedian, she's like, I don't get it. And then, you know, she shows me some comedian, I'm like, I don't understand that's funny. How is that funny? I don't, who is this guy? Is that meant to be funny? I don't understand any of this. So all of those dynamics together, and then you throw children into that mix. And then you're trying to figure out, how do you raise these children in a context that is virtually polarizingly different than what you grew up in,
mm-hmm.
and what she grew up in, expectations, definitions of success, the roles that sports or academics might play in a home, and raising all this. And if we as Christians in the church are not leading the conversation, because this isn't going anywhere. It's not going anywhere. If we're not leading the conversation in this and cultivating the beauty of marriages that and families that look and are mixed so differently and finding the ways in which God is speaking in those, then the culture is going to lead the story on mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And then we're always going to be trying to catch up to what the culture is saying. And usually the culture is getting it wrong.
Well, I think for me personally, I grew up in Amarillo, was very sheltered. I didn't have a lot of exposure to a bunch of cultures, right? So you kind of just had the different classifications of the town. That was there, but I was sort of isolated to my dad's church school. And when I moved to Dallas in 2000 and got a job at a tech company, it was my first exposure to a Muslim. Like there was a developer there who was Muslim, and his name was funny. I couldn't pronounce it, and you know, I was kind of exposed to his world. And he was talking about what's the fasting period, not Ramadan, but
Ramadan.
That's yeah. what it was. And he was talking about Ramadan and how he couldn't sleep with his girlfriend or smoke during Ramadan, but then I would catch him smoking, you know, in the parking garage. And it was this whole experience of like, you know, wondering what his culture was all about. Seemed like a normal dude, like very, very normal. So I was exposed to that. And then there was a show called School Ties when I was growing up with Brendan Fraser. And it was about him being Jewish. And he was trying to hide being Jewish.
Oh, it was the football movie, right?
It was the football mm-hmm. movie. Football, and it was yeah. Matt Damon always plays the worst character sometimes.
That's great.
I want to love him, but even in Interstellar, he's an astronaut in Interstellar, I wanted him to go off that planet and never come back.
Just don't ever come back.
Dude, there was a little bit of research a little back. Someone calculated the amount of money in Hollywood it has taken to save Matt Damon from all the various
but Jason
positions
Bourne,
he's been
yeah,
in.
But Jason Bourne redeems him, yes. and then he does something else, and you're just like, I hate that guy. But in that movie, As I watched it growing up, I didn't understand why these guys were being so mean to Brendan Fraser. Dude, he's the Encino Man. Chill out.
He's Encino Man.
You know, but it didn't, because the whole Jewish thing didn't make sense to me. Like, why would they be so aggressive towards him? He looks like them. He plays football really well, but the moment they found out he was a Jew, they attacked him. Mm-hmm. And that represented to me an understanding that it's not about the exterior. Like, if you're Jewish, that represents something to a culture that people don't understand, and they attack it. And even on your Instagram the other day, I think I mentioned to you, you were in some traditional Indian garb, like robes or whatever.
Outfits. We just call them clothes.
Clothes.
That's the holy sacrament that you were wearing.
But I loved it because it challenged me to, because you're like always a cool dresser. Like, you know, you always show up and you have a style that I always love and appreciate, and that puts you in a completely different frame of mind for me. That I go, you know, that's who he is. I want to know that. And you and Anu were in that moment, and that I think for me represented a challenge that I would say that probably Hannah and her family would represent, which is, you know, how do we understand, like, what made you who you are?
Yeah.
And what still makes you who you are?
Yeah, and that's part of it. It's part of learning your story. What makes you? There's a saying, I think it's Peter Scazzaro. He says, Jesus might be in your heart, but grandpa's in your bones. And so how do you figure out the story of your childhood, the story of how you were raised and how you were formed, not just by your immediate family, but by the DNA and the ideas and the thoughts and the stories that have been passed on from generation to generation? You know, it's really interesting, the difference between Western culture and Eastern culture. Every culture has stories. Every culture has stories. But Westerners use stories to entertain, whereas Easterners use stories to form. Mm-hmm. It's very different. So I can give you an example. If I was sitting with, if my wife and I were sitting with her parents and we said, hey, we're trying to decide between, you know, getting a Toyota or a Ford, what should we do? Then typical, you know, white family would say, typical, and this is, of course, this is a grand generalization, but they would say, okay, let's go to the pros and cons. Americans are very linear in their thought process. We'll go through the pros and cons, and maybe he'll say, man, maybe you should get a Ford because, you know, my grandpa used to have a 57 Ford back mm-hmm. in the day. But it's very informational. It's very entertaining. If I ask that same question to my dad or to my uncles, all I would get is, you know, when I was younger, I used to walk everywhere I go. And they tell me this grand story. Yep. And at no point are they giving me an answer.
Sure.
It's just a story. And somewhere in that story, I'm supposed to figure out what the lesson, what the principle is, and then apply that principle to whatever decision I'm making. Mm-hmm. So all those stories are inside of us. So it's interesting. My oldest son, I was telling him, hey, I'm going to take you to India because I want you to see how this side of your family, like you're Indian. And he's saying, but I'm also white. So in my mind, I'm like, no, you're brown. He's like, but no, I'm only half brown. So he's pushing me like, well, Dad, I'm both. I'm half. So he says, well, if we're going to go explore India, shouldn't we explore mom's side? I'm like, well, mom's from Texas. I don't, what do we explore? So we unpack it more like, okay, your mom is Irish. Yeah. There's something about Irish mm-hmm. blood mm-hmm. that fights against the English. And what is in your blood? And so you can, now you can start to see with children, like where does he get this from? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not just from you. It's not just from your wife. It's stories that have been passed down. The lineage. Work ethic, mm-hmm. the conviction of how their ideas, their creativity, all of this is passed down. Mm-hmm. There's generalizations, right? Like, why are Dutch people so cheap? Well, that's kind of like this idea that's passed down. Why are people from this region this way or people from this region this way? So all of that's inside of our families, and we have to be able to get those stories out, but not just celebrate them. We also have to create space for loss. Mm-hmm. So for example, I'm not married to an Indian girl, but when I see another Indian couple, husband and wife, both Indian, or in your case, mm-hmm. husband and wife, both Vietnamese, your case, husband and wife, both African-American or black, your case, husband and wife, both Hispanic, and we look at their kids, there's a part of us that says, man, if I stayed in my native land, that's probably what my family would look like. There's not a ton of white girls walking around India for me to choose from. Mm-hmm. So my family would look like that. And so I can mourn a loss without changing my life, but I can mourn and say, man, because the world has shifted, because sin entered the world, colonialism entered the world, and now people are getting moved all across the world. Slavery in Africa, slavery in India, slavery in China, people are moving all over. We can mourn the loss of what has happened and at the same time celebrate the life that is. Mm-hmm. And we have to create space for that for people. And most churches are not very good at this. Most families are not very good at this. How do you create sense of this? How do you begin to enjoy the celebration of your people? So in our family, we celebrate Indian holidays, but in the U.S. because you're still part of this people, and we want you to celebrate that. We're not saying we're better than anybody. This culture is not, but there's a language, there's a food, there's a color, there's clothing, there's music. And we want you to be a part of that, and we want our children to be around other people who look like them.
But that's big.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you don't mind. So I think from our side, one of the hardest parts, you know, growing up, and then. Like you talked about getting married to someone Caucasian, there's a ridicule that comes from your own
for
people.
Sure. Yep. And that's the other side that nobody talks about. Yeah. See, people want to talk about the racist side from, you know, whether it's from white people, but there's a lot of both hate sides. Coming from your own people.
Yeah, there was, I mean, that was probably, I mean, I think I always had a thing, right? I guess a white girl. I blame La Bamba because, you know, Richie's always in Ghana.
Oh, come on.
I think I was indoctrinated by Richie. And so I was always looking for that, I think. And so, but I remember in high school, you know, all of them, you know, as you started dating girls and they were, you know, white, the Hispanic girls saying, you know, why are you doing that? You know, they're giving you lip. Or, you know, and then as you get into your young adult years, you know, they're giving you even more grief, all the way up to the end of it, you know, until you're married, you know, and, you know, you're just getting that grief that, you know, why didn't you stay, you know, within your race?
Yeah.
And you're almost kind of, like I said, just ridiculed for it.
Yeah.
And it's a hard one. And then the hard part for the kids is trying to get them to understand Hispanic, Mexican culture, yeah. but we live in Texas. Mm-hmm. And I live in a predominantly white neighborhood, mm-hmm. school district. So it's not like there's taquerias on every corner or, you know. Yeah.
Little, say that again.
You
know,
there should be. There should be.
There should be.
There's
not necessarily, you know. So whenever we go back to, you know, different parts of town and here in DFW where you have, yeah. you know, your traditional kind of like Hispanic shops, or Mexican shops, you know, that's the only time. Really. Yeah. And so it's kind of hard to help them appreciate that part of it. It bothers me. Sometimes it hurts my feelings. I was talking to Keisha last night as we were talking about this. I was like, I think it hurts my feelings sometimes whenever the kids kind of like, you know, downplay the Hispanic side of it.
Totally.
Like, you know, because I know, you know, I'm an immigrant. I was born in Mexico, raised here in the States. I got my citizenship at 17.
Yeah.
Like, I know what the fight was to be naturalized here.
Yeah.
The process. And I believe red, white, and blue. But I'm also Mexican. I love soccer more than I love football.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those are those things that I wish sometimes my kids, whenever they kind of joke around with it, like they don't see it. They don't recognize it. They don't have that awareness to it, but it hurts.
Yeah. But they will one day, mm-hmm. one day they'll wake up and it might be from a positive experience or a negative experience.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, oh wait, I'm not white. My wife would tell you this. Yeah. My wife would tell you, she never thought about it until she walks in a store with kids who are darker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then she notices how people look more
mm-hmm.
and feeling that, you know, I'm like, well, welcome to every day of my life,
yeah.
you know? So this is really interesting. For 15 years, 14 years of our marriage, there was nothing in our house. Like if you walked into our house and I wasn't there and you didn't know who lived there, let's say you took all the family photos out, you wouldn't know that an Indian lived there because everything was decorated
sure.
from a Western white culture.
Sure.
Everything.
Home goods.
Montgomery and it took, yeah, Home Goods, you know, Magnolia.
Yeah.
And it took me 15 years to finally get the courage to ask my wife, like, hey, how come you never want to have anything in here? And she's very appreciative of Indian culture. My parents show up. She appreciates it. She wears the saris and the outfits.
Yeah.
So it's there. But it didn't even occur to her that this is not how he grew up. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should have Indian tables or Indian mm-hmm. art, we're very artistic people.
Sure.
Why isn't this here? Or food. I asked her like a couple years ago, I was like, you know, in all the years we've been married, you've never once asked, not one time have you asked, do you want Indian food? Can I go get it for you? Can I learn how to make it? And, like, none of it. Which is, it's hard for me to watch my kids struggle to eat Indian food.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you think this is spicy? That's yogurt, man. Yeah. There's like nothing spicy in there at all.
Salt and pepper.
Oh, yeah.
So it takes a long time to be able to have these conversations of this is the, we want a home that represents and honors both cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy, I would say on one side, it's easier for me or for some of us to discover our culture because we grew up in it.
Yeah. Of course.
Whereas Hannah is thinking, well, what exactly mm-hmm. is my culture?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because most white people are, my wife and I have this conversation and I always say, white people don't know what to do when they're not the priority for even 2 minutes.
Ouch.
When
chill, ooh, chill.
Ooh, dagger.
Chill. Now listen, you know, if you hold up if you take a white onion and take a, you know, slice of it and hold up to the sun, that's how, like, my wife and I are both white, like translucent white. We have freckles and moles and we aren't even like the Greek olive. Like we have like no great melanin that can be represented.
If you go to Home Depot, there's just a section of paint. It just says Brent.
Yeah.
It's like
just white. Brent.
Yes.
White.
Yes.
It's true. And you know, when you're from West Texas, you always hear stories. Well, maybe there's a Native American in your bloodline somewhere. And wow. So you're like, I got to open a casino one day, but that really is never, that's never really.
Asians dominate casinos. I know. I've seen your whole family at those casinos.
Oh yeah. So you see them. They're there every Saturday.
Stephanie's heritage is German and mine is Welsh or, you know, UK. And so I have no luck in a conversation like this going, hey guys, I want to talk about interracial marriage.
Yeah.
But I will say that
if your wife is German and she was raised with German ancestry, there's a type of parenting that German families have. Mm. So a lot of Germans come from families that show no affection mm-hmm. to their children. It's very staunch. It's very rigid.
Yeah, it's way up the line.
Right, but all that is in there.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying it's harder for white people to know that because you're like, well, I'm white, but I'm German. Okay, there is something about German that's in you.
Sure.
And you're trying to figure it out.
I totally agree with that. And I guess whenever you said I can't be the priority for 2 minutes, I'm all I'm saying is that and this is the way I approach the world right now is because in this room, because it was an aha moment for me. It was actually Taiwan this week because he was announcing his engagement again. Congratulations on
that. Congratulations.
And he put the picture, and I was like, you know, Narup just mentioned this, and it was dawning on me that this is the new norm for, you know, relationships. There's not really a poster child of, like, what it looks like to be married anymore. Like, it's you meet people and you fall in love, and it's like there's no, like, there's just a new environment now for relationships that I kind of want to bring to the forefront. Then I started thinking, well, Lewis and Kristen Roman, our speakers, they're both, you know, she's from Baltimore, he's from Mexico, Dan and Krista, Leanne, you know, he's Malaysian Chinese from Australia, she's white Australian. I mean, you just talk about it, and I think culture is the biggest
Jimmy
part
and Irene,
of it.
Well, even Jimmy and Irene, she's Zambian.
Right. Yeah. Well, and Tim Ross and Julia, I think she's Jamaican.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's cultures that are there that, you know, you talk about. And, well, I guess my whole point was that just the fact that more marriages that are happening now are a representation of a new normal. Like, I liked what you said about that, that's the commonality now for when you're doing marriages. It's not just two people of the same race anymore. And I like that.
Especially you go to urban areas. So you are in the urban areas of whether it's any city, in your churches, you're going to see more and more and more diversity in marriages and families than you would if you're far out in rural areas or if you're just in very homogenous areas. You're going to see more and more of this. But it's true. You know, when I loved how you talked about you were at a worship service and they're singing songs in different languages. We'll do stuff like that. We'll sing a song in a different language. And I'll always get a text, an email from some white person. why you got to sing in Spanish, man? We should learn English. I'm like, wow, for 2 minutes? In an hour and 30-minute service, for 2 minutes.
But that's my point.
You weren't the priority.
I think that gets too much play because I don't feel like that's the mindset. I'm trying to create conversations like this so it can sort of be, because, yes, I'm white. I'm a middle-aged, white, conservative male. I mean, just label me. Right? So that's where we are in this world. So, I can step in bear traps all day long when it comes to race, right? So I'm not trying to create an environment where I know something that y'all don't know or vice versa. I'm just saying that, you know, when I look at the world, if I'm watching any sports game these days, if I'm watching, if I'm at the mall, if I'm anywhere in society, in Texas, if we go anywhere around the country, I've been around the world, the world's changed.
Yeah.
And if somebody is anchoring themselves in this white English, like, I can't move out of this lane that I'm in, then that person's just going to be completely passed by at some point. And I just don't think the world revolves around that anymore. Now, you can, if you watch Shiny Happy People, you'll realize that there's cults out there that subscribe to keeping the purity of whatever it is, their theology, their race, whatever. You can find those camps if you want to. I'm just saying, in normal society, if you go to a church and they sing in Spanish for 2 minutes and somebody's offended by that, I just think that person is in need of some serious, like, understanding of the world they're living in now. Because it's just, you can't represent yourself
for sure
anymore like that.
Yeah, understanding of the world and understanding of the gospel.
I think it's changing. I don't know if there's been a change yet. I think it's changing. I think that it is becoming more acceptable. I think that I know when Keisha and I got married, I remember her grandparents loved me to death, but they weren't all for it at the beginning. Her grandmother, now she loved me all the way through until she passed away, and we became great friends, and they blessed the marriage. But there was a winning over time, I want to say. Almost had to prove something that someone else did it.
Well, they had stereotypes. Yeah. They had misunderstandings.
But don't you think it would be harder? Because there, I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on this. Because I think there is a difference, and I've seen it experientially, not just with color of skin or ethnicity, but the education level and socioeconomic level of that. So there's a difference between an educated college grad, successful executive level Hispanic versus, hey, meet my Hispanic boyfriend. He you know, owns a landscaping company. And the way that, I think there is an economic level and education level to this of how people are treated, not just the ethnicity they come from.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, for me and my wife, like, she grew up in Southlake in her backyard right here. Very wealthy family. Very affluent family. And I grew up over in PG, Pleasant Grove, the hood. And it was two very different cultures, not only from a, like you said, socioeconomic sort of way, but also just culturally as well. We went down to Texas, went to school at UT, Hook'em Horns. But then we came back up here, and so we were living, I was living at my parents' house, she was living at hers, and it was just two different worlds. We're driving, you know, I'm driving an hour to see her in, you know, this super fancy, swanky little part of the city, which to me, not growing up here, was like, I don't feel like I belong. Just entering, passing right. this border right. is just different, and being a part of her family and all of the things they're doing. And that they've been blessed with, it's just different. Like, and then you go to, you know, my house. I grew up in government housing over in you know, the east side of Dallas and everything. And we slowly sort of made our way over to the nicer part of the suburbs. But it was just a little bit different. And so I think having to not only me assimilate into her culture and her way of living, but her also assimilating into kind of my side of the family as well. Because her coming over to my house is just a different experience, you know.
Yeah, so, but Brent, I would say, to your point, yes, they're going to get left behind. And but to Eric's point, it's slower than you think. Yeah. Because I one of the reasons I appreciate EXO, when I first was like, oh, should I be a part of EXO? And I'm looking at the lineup, whether you did this intentionally or not, I'm like, this is a really diverse group of people on staff and leadership and speakers. And what I appreciated was, just because someone's brown doesn't mean they have to share the brown experience. Yeah. Right. It's like, Eric, tell us what it's like to be a brown leader. Why can't he just talk to you about leadership?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Like,
that's my point.
Yeah, you know, Ty, tell us how to be a brown creative. Why can't he just be creative? So I think what EXO is doing is creating a space where people can be seen as professional, as wise, as being able to share in a conversation and not have to play the, well, I'm brown, let me talk to you about this.
Sure.
And that's not happening everywhere. Mm-hmm. I can tell you the number of conferences I'm invited to even to attend. I'll get a conference, like, come attend this pastor's conference and learn how to be a better pastor. And I look and it's white. Like, how are, I get you could probably unpack theology to me because you don't need to be whatever color to know theology. But how are you going to help me see a perspective that I'm dealing with every single day in my own life and in my church when, and I can name 100 Christian conferences. Hundreds of them. And sadly, the world is ahead. The world sees diversity as an imperative or as like a mandate. Mm. Where the gospel is like, this is an imperative for us.
But you saw it firsthand. When the George Floyd stuff happened, you saw every white pastor go through their list of names
one
and
black
try
friend.
To find the black friend, black pastor who could speak on that subject. And I got upset with one of my friends. I said, dude, I understand you want to respond to this right now. But it is so inauthentic because you won't talk about this in a year from now or 2 years from now.
Yeah.
And it felt like it was just a forced conversation. And it made me mad. I was just like, it's, I understand. And one of the things it was Tim Ross. I made a conversation. He helped me understand it more because it was a really hard, it was a challenging time for me to understand how I should feel guilty about something that I wasn't a part of. It was just completely, you know, there's a book called White Guilt. And there was just all this stuff that was just like hammering the people in this world that like I didn't do anything wrong. I grew up I was born in 77. I was way past a lot of stuff, you know. I don't have those feelings. I don't have that sentiment, but yet I was labeled or whatever. And Tim Ross just said, all we want to do is be heard. All we want to do is be heard. That's all. We just want to be able to share and let you know how we feel and you listen, and that's it. You don't have to do anything.
But I think it's a great conversation you're having, but I challenge some of my black friends who have this conversation. We need more of this. We need more of this. I'm like, what do you mean by more of this? Because it sounds like you only mean black or white. And I'll challenge my friends. Name one Asian head coach. Name one. And there are. Name one. There's an Indian coach in the NFL. Nobody who I know that knows football can name the guy. They can't. So like, what do you mean by diversity? Like, I think many Americans only think diversity is black or white.
Absolutely.
So name five black pastors. I could. Can you name five Hispanic pastors? Five Indian pastors, five Asian pastors, five Vietnamese pastors. So the conversation is much longer than we think it is.
Yeah, we get tribal.
We have to get deeper in the conversation of what this actually looks like. And I'm glad you spoke up to your friend, because inadvertently what you're doing when there's a national tragedy, you're like, I need to bring in a black guy to talk about this. So I need to bring in a Hispanic guy. What you're doing is creating the narrative that they can only be heard in that space.
Yeah.
Why can't there just be good theologians who are Asian?
Yeah, exactly.
Or good fathers who are Asian or black. And so it was funny, about a couple years ago, I took one of my staff members to go visit my parents. I had to pick up something. My mom knows I started the church. She knows we started it. But I show up, I bring my friend Jim, who's white. We walk in the house, and my mom, she says, oh, do you work at LifeGate? And he says, yeah, I'm one of the pastors here. And she says, oh, are you Nirup's boss? And he's like, no, I work for him. And it blew her mind. She's like, my children have made it. White people work for them. Like, my children, like, this is the dream. This is why we came here. And our own imagination, amongst Asians and Black and Hispanic, we often lack the imagination that we can be something, that we can lead spiritual conversations, that we could be CEOs. Absolutely. Most Asians, they're like, hey, most Asian families are like, hey, keep your head down.
Yeah.
Stay out of trouble.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even if someone assaults you, don't call. That's why when Asian assault was happening in New York and Chicago and LA, they weren't calling the police.
Yeah.
Like, hey, keep it on the radar. We don't want your name in public. Like, just keep it low.
Yeah. Asians operate on a very big honor system. Anything to, you know, bring shame upon the family. So even getting attacked like that, going public with it, would be considered bringing shame upon the family.
So most Asian families, you have four career options: engineer, lawyer, doctor. Failure. That's it. You have four career options. So even in our own imagination, we lack this understanding. We often, as Asian kids, are not allowed to dream. We're not allowed to dream about what we could do. I want to be a CEO. I want to be a leader. Like, no. You stay here.
Yeah.
You be good. You be successful. You stay out of trouble. Stay out of jail.
Yeah.
Stay out of these friends. Do this and stay out of this. And so there's this path that's laid out for us. And so we often lack imagination of what we could do. But a lot of these things are changing. If you told someone in 1977, you know, one day there'll be an Indian NFL offensive coordinator. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Vivek's running for, you know, the Republican nomination.
You know, they're starting a professional cricket league in America.
Oh, right.
Wow. It's being billions of dollars are going into this.
Yeah.
And if you told someone that in 40 years ago, it would have laughed you off the planet, but like pay millions of dollars are going into this.
It only makes me uncomfortable because I hate cricket. You know,
it's like baseball, but better.
That's what they say. Ah. And there's this whole thing where Dave Portnoy was being interviewed by Piers Morgan, and he kind of got you know, just sort of caught off guard because Piers Morgan had this cricket expert on, and he was confronting Dave Portnoy going, hey, I've got this guy who's a cricket expert. We want to know why you don't like cricket. Mm-hmm. And Dave Portnoy was like, because I grew up in America. I mean, we have baseball. We don't need cricket. Yeah. He's like, I said, I'm not saying your sport is not beautiful. I just don't understand it, and I don't want to understand it. So this whole conversation.
Soccer was not American.
And I think there will be a generation that falls in love with it in America, but I still, every time the World Cup's on, I go, this is the year. I'm going to get into the World Cup. And about 10 minutes into it, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. It's still 0-0.
Yeah.
Where's Ronaldo?
But part of that goes back to the earliest conversation. It's story. You haven't connected to it. And that's okay. You haven't connected. It took me a long time to get into football. I just didn't get it. I was like, I don't understand. These dudes are hitting each other. You know, why do you call it football?
Sometimes you have to play it.
Tennis
was something that my wife loved, and I didn't love until I played it. And then I was like, really went all in. And then I retired because I was smashing rackets.
But if you
can
connect it to a story, my kids were not into football at all. And then I showed them a couple football movies, Little Giants, Remember the Titans, Invincible, which is a great movie with Mark Wahlberg.
The Program.
And now that there's a story attached to a game, they like football.
Yeah.
Now they like it because it's about a story. Same with basketball. This is true of anything. Once there's a story that pulls you into it, you're attached to it. So there's a great movie called Time to Kill.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite movies ever. And at the very closing scene, Matthew McConaughey is making the closing argument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's describing what happens to this poor girl who is just brutally assaulted. Mm-hmm. And then he says, and I want you to imagine that she was white. And everything changes the second he says that, because now you've found yourself in the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And now it changes your compassion, your conviction to the truth of what is this and how do I form myself to this?
Yeah.
And I would say at a holistic level, at a comprehensive level, most brown people, whether it's Hispanic or Asian or African or Indian or Chinese, Vietnamese, Black, have an easier time entering a communal story than white people do. Because white people are raised predominantly as individuals, whereas brown people are raised as, you know, I raised my kids, If one of you succeeds, you all succeed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of you fails, you all fail. Mm-hmm. One of you's in trouble, you're all in mm-hmm. trouble. But this is, so we feel the pain of when this happens in another community. We're not attached to this person, but we feel it communally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas most white people are like, well, I don't get it. I don't understand. Like, you don't even know the guy.
Yeah.
But we feel it. It's part of who we are. Mm-hmm. And that's not a bad thing. It's a space to begin to ask those questions. I think it's only a bad thing if you're like, well, it doesn't affect me and I don't care. Versus, it doesn't affect me. Why doesn't it affect me? And how can I enter into this and not feel guilt? Because that's not helpful to anybody.
Well, I just think I want to be able to understand how to resolve the tension, right? Because I don't, obviously, as I think what could be pictured is, because I'm white, I'm ignorant to the fact that I have advantages because I'm white or whatever, when that's not the way. If you talk to anybody who's successful, it's not because of your color most of the time. Sometimes you have trust fund babies and you just have, mm-hmm. but a lot of times it's the hard work, it's the effort. And so when somebody puts the hard work and effort in and you haven't walked a mile in their shoes, yeah. it's very difficult to just say, well, they got there because of their color.
So now I do believe that for sure. But I do think there is a standpoint to it where there are some meetings that happen on the golf course. And that's not your bill. So that's the hard part.
That definitely happens. Yeah, and you know, there is a very, I would say, if I was giving any coaching advice to anybody coming up through college or whatever, it doesn't matter what race they are, it is make sure you are inserting yourself yeah. into opportunities and don't assume just because of how you were raised that you'll be cut off. I would say that I'm attracted to, and this goes back to what you said about XO, it is absolutely 100% a no for me if I get somebody on stage just because of what they represent.
Yeah.
From right. I'm looking for authenticity. So when Jimmy Evans is on stage and he's talking about how he almost messed up in marriage and he's funny and humorous and practical and all that stuff, the next person that gets up needs to be able to carry that microphone.
Right.
Yep. And speak clearly and have a moment to say it. It is absolutely 100% a bonus if that person represents a wider audience than a white male, like Jimmy Evans mm-hmm. is.
Yep.
That's a bonus, but I can't always predict that.
Yeah.
And so what we had happen organically, and Sean Reed told me this one time, he said, I'm so grateful for XO because I think at the time we had like Dan Leanne and Bianca Oltoff and we had a lot of different flavors of speakers right. and Bianca Oltoff's like a Mexican. She says, you know, she's really, mm-hmm. she's so fiery and, a lot of times I was just like, these people can speak. Can they speak on marriage? Let's see what happens. And I love it, but it's not me going, I need a Mexican. Yeah. Right, I need a female speaker.
And that's what the world yeah. is doing.
That's what I'm saying. And sometimes yeah. we are left with just, unfortunately, but sometimes we're just left with what we have, which is not necessarily a picture of every representation of what I want, but I'm not going to force it, right? So it's just, I love, if you're in our green rooms, and you guys are, and you know, that chemistry and in the speaker with mm-hmm. Dave and Ashley and Sean Lynette and you and Hannah and Dan Leanne, all you have this just great group of people who love marriage, who love speaking on marriage, and it's not a, and they honor my dad yeah. and they love what he's doing, but XO is really this umbrella they can go, I can minister through this.
Well, I think it's what heaven's gonna look like, right? I
yeah. mean,
it's
supposed to
look like that. And so, you know, me coming in to XO 2 years ago, and I met with Brent for 2 years getting to know you before you actually decided
we courted each other. Yeah, that's right.
He had to vet you. He's like, I had to bet this guy. He works for Nokia. Gotta check my papers.
So yeah,
I signed your papers. It's all good.
Yeah, okay. Good.
Yeah. I appreciate that. So he, but you know, I think during the time period of me getting, you know, onto here, so it's not just on stage, it's behind the scenes as well, yeah. right? Because I'm not on stage, but you know, we get to make decisions and make this stuff happen here at XO. Is I didn't believe that I was a chief operating officer. I just didn't. I didn't believe I was an executive. It's based in Southlake. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm from GP, not yeah. the PG, but from GP, from Grand Prairie. You know, some people, Little Mexico, 303. And so, you know, you have this kind of like, you put your own ceiling, your own limit on yourself. Yeah. And Keisha was really good at telling me that, hey, you know, if God calls you to do it, you can
yeah,
do it.
That's right.
She didn't bring race into it. She never brought, you know, but she did have a different mentality.
Yeah.
She did have a different kind of like philosophy that if God calls you to do it, you can do it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, believing that and being prayerful through it, removing race from it, removing my own cultural limitations, mm-hmm. Really God just opened doors. And you know, for Brent, I would just, you know, kind of like just, in, you know, you saying like, how do I approach it? I think you approach it right. I just know that I've seen you. I've seen how you approach the stage. I've seen how you approach behind the stage. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're doing this podcast, is just to get the conversation. Like what Tim said, we just want to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
You don't learn without having some listening ears.
Right.
Yep. And I think that's a challenge right now with a lot of culture, is no one wants to listen. Everyone just wants to blast. Yep. And just give you my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of hard stuff that's being still, I guess, taught to a lot of kids out there today.
Yeah.
That I still battle today. You know, you talked about the golf course. I still walk on a golf course, and there's sometimes I don't feel part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm there all the time. Mm-hmm. I walked in recently, and I know we're not trying to be here, but I walked in recently, and the guy was like, "Oh, do you work here?" It's like, I don't work here.
I own the place.
I own it.
I'm a member. Yeah. And you know, he was an older fella, you know, so you kind of figure, all right, you give him grace. You show him, hey, you know, but it's nice to meet you. Introduce, hey, my name is Eric. Nice to meet you. Mm-hmm. And so those are tough parts.
Yeah, the wealthy boomer generation in the country club society, that is going to be very difficult for them to turn that corner.
Yeah.
They are turning the corner slowly. I think that when you say the slow change.
That's the slow change.
I think the 40 and under crowd is already there. For the most part, I don't think they need a lot, because they're cold. All the movies they watched, all of the, you know, we watched all the young, those older movies where it was a representation of, you know, a Caucasian husband and wife, and you know, the if there was race involved, it was always, you know, this stereotypical role for that person.
Right.
That's what I grew up with, a lot of those movies. And then now it's not like that. I mean, there's an introduction now to see people. And I think as long as it's authentic, I'm on board.
I think it's slowly changing.
Yeah,
I think so. It's funny that you mentioned Keisha's grandma.
Mm-hmm.
It was Hannah's grandma threatened to make me a slave in her Farmville. True story. Remember Farmville on Facebook? She threatened to make me a slave in her Farmville.
That's a like, that's a heavy word to throw around.
Yeah, I was like, I don't even know if that's, can you do that?
She figured it out.
Can you access my profile somehow? Would it change? But she's, you know, she's Southern through and through. But there's two things that I think, and this is what I'll give credit to you and Pastor Jimmy with EXO. There's two things that I think you guys have done incredibly well. The first is this. Is I think what you're talking about backstage and being able to, the camaraderie, mm-hmm. the kind of the sense of family, we love each other, we love hanging out, is because the gospel has always been at the core of everything.
Yeah, sure.
It's never been about, let's just have great marriages, talk about great marriages, equip great marriages, raise money to help marriages. It's always been that the gospel, your marriage is a reflection of God's love for his people.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And so his love is for all people. And so I think because, especially your dad, has kept the gospel at the core of it, at the center of it, it creates the environment where all of us have different backgrounds, but we all love Jesus.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we all are dependent on the Holy Spirit. So that's the first thing you've done. But the second thing I think you've done a really good job of, there's a lot of people, and this is what one of my biggest pet peeves of churches, is they love diversity on the platform, but not diversity at the table where decisions are made.
Mm. Mm.
So they'll give brown people a voice on the platform, but not a voice in where the money goes, where the strategy goes, where the hiring goes, not where real power is.
Mm-hmm.
And what XO has done is you look behind. So I'm privileged to behind the scenes, looking at your executive team, your staff. You guys are giving them the power to make decisions, to actually build the culture, not just, hey, we create a little spot for you, go on stage and sing a song. And because we need a black person to sing a song. So we look, you know, like, oh, we did a gospel song. We had a black person up there. And that's what we don't need. We don't need this sort of fake, let me put someone up there to, so we look diverse, but we're actually have no heart for it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Because interracial marriages is not easy. Interracial anything is not easy. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with stories, with complications, with past trauma, with, so were you born here?
Yeah, I was born
here. So you're born here, were
first
you born
generation.
Here?
Yeah.
Yep.
So me and him are the only ones not born here. So we know, I tell my kids, like, bro, you guys hit the lottery, man. Born in America, you hit the lottery. This is the only country you could be dumb as rocks, and they'll still pay for you to go to college. This is amazing.
It is true.
You can throw a ball?
You can do anything. And this is amazing. This is truly, truly, like, I've lived overseas. This is truly.
Uh-huh.
When people complain about America, if I was running for president, I would say, as my first act of business, I've chartered some airlines. If you hate it here, we'll fly you anywhere you want, but you can never come back.
Yeah.
Mm. Just leave. Don't ever come back. because this is an amazing. Is it perfect? No. To your point earlier, we will never be perfect on this side of eternity because you can't have a policy to end sin. Only the gospel does that. So, are we perfect? Absolutely not. But it's amazing.
Yeah.
It is incredibly amazing to live in this country. And I tell my kids, you hit the jackpot, man. You hit the freaking jackpot. There's more work to be done. There's sacrifices we make. We know the stories. But what these conversations do, what EXO is doing, equipping parents, equipping marriages, this is the hard work.
Yeah.
And what in 20 years, when families show up at conferences, and they're studying about marriages, they need to look out and see, okay, these families look like us. They understand us. They know the story. They know it, when you walked in today with his son, I was like, is that my kid? Like, am I missing one? He looked just like one of my kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, we need to be able to see those, our children be able to see those. And I think you are helping, and EXO is helping, leading a conversation in this.
Good.
And it's very important that we're doing
it. Well, you instigated it with the roundtable discussion, and I feel like we probably all would agree that we hit the jackpot when we met you. So thanks for being a part of
EXO. I tell my wife that all the time.
No, we love you.
I do have a question. I'm very curious, because when you were talking about the gospel-centered being the glue that holds us all together, I don't know from the Asian perspective, but from the African-American black perspective, when the Christianity was given to us, we were worshiping God from a place of salvation, from the standpoint of getting off a plantation. He was a provider. He was a chain breaker. But then when you get to the white counterparts, God was just good, and God was great. So how does that play a role in your family as well, though, with that spiritual view when it's based differently?
Of course, Christianity was used and abused in bad ways to weaponize, to keep slaves in slavery.
Yeah.
But don't forget, the gospel got to Africa before it got to Europe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Augustine was around way before Martin Luther was. So it was in Africa. And so Asians were slaves.
Yeah.
Japanese were slaves. Indians. If you go to Trinidad and Tobago, it looks like you're in India because they were all taken there to be slaves.
They're still slaves today. Uyghurs in China are still slaves. There's still slavery happening.
I think what is the transformation is realizing the gospel is not the good news that Jesus died for you so you get to go to heaven. Mm-hmm. The gospel is the good news that here and now your life can be transformed by the transcendent love of Christ, that I can now see my wife, see my children, see my friends, see my family as those who are held in God's love. Mm-hmm. And it transforms the way that I seek their highest good. Mm. And so for many people, the gospel ends at the cross. The gospel doesn't end at the cross. The gospel begins at the cross, and it moves you to a table. And it moves you to a table, and at this table, there's black, and there's white, and there's Jew, and there's Gentile, there's Greek, and there's, you know, there's free and slave all sitting together, dining at the table, and Jesus is at the center. His body, his blood, his resurrection is all right there. And so if the gospel doesn't lead you to a table, you have a very anemic gospel. Mm. Yeah. You don't believe, because it turns out, you know, Peter is with Jesus for, whenever someone's like, oh, we got to end racism. Like, well, Peter was with Jesus for 3 years. Turns out homie's still a racist. And he was with the best disciple maker ever.
Yep.
And he's still a racist. And Jesus is like, I got to meet this guy in a dream. Mm. Because he's not going to go to conference. He's not going to get in a book. I got to meet him in a dream and tell him like, hey man, you're racist. Mm-hmm. And we got to solve some issues here. And that's the beauty of what Jesus does. You look at the church in Philippi. It's the church in Philippi started with Paul, a Greek or a Jewish convert, an Asian, probably one of your great aunts, an Asian dealer of purple cloth.
That's right.
You got a Greek slave girl, and you got a Roman GI, all meeting together. What language are they speaking?
Yeah. Mm.
What food are they eating? What songs are they singing? And yet there's something happening there. And the beauty of heaven is reflected as they work through unity. Is marriage not a constant fight for unity? And that's what the church is, and that's what Christian friendship is. And unity happens when we create the space for people to feel safe enough to share your story.
Hey, it's a great conversation. We got to go. We got the staff chapel coming up.
We got to go.
Thanks for being here, man, today.
Anytime.
And Lifegate Church in Denver.
We can talk about this all day.
Hey, you've got 12 openings for weddings next year. Is that right? Was that what
12,
I heard?
2024. 12
if you're getting
openings.
Married next year, 12 openings.
I give preference to Monday weddings.
Okay, good. Absolutely.
I don't do mountain stuff. If it's more than 2 hours outside the city, if there's wild animals, if there's mountains, I'm an indoor wedding guy.
Well, if you're in Denver area, go see Nirup at Lifegate.
That's right. And, great church.
And he's a great pastor, a great friend. Yeah. And then if you're watching this right now, and if you want, leave us your story in the comments. If this love hit home with you, and you have a story you want to tell, any comments there, leave it in the comment section. Like and subscribe. Thanks, guys, for being a part of EXO Live today. Appreciate it.
Bye. Love you guys.
Peace.
All right.